right reasons and all this stuff, man, my disease still tells me the old lie that, like, you ain't going to be nothing, you're never going to be nothing, you're never going to amount to nothing, and nothing you say or do has any importance to life and to your life and to the lives of those around you. And, like, and that's where my nervousness comes from, man, because I sit up here and I have this disease, and this disease doesn't want me to tell the truth. This disease doesn't want me to tell you guys that, like, I still suffer from it. And it comes at me with these little friends in my shitty committee up in my head, like false pride and ego, and it tells me that I am somebody and I shouldn't feel like this, and I don't have to feel like this, and I shouldn't have to tell anybody because I can handle this on my own. So, like, getting to the topic and like telling you guys how I feel and stuff like that, even stand at this podium, it's been a strange day, and I've been through all kinds of emotions today. I woke up today and I was happy, and then I thought of, and I went to work and I got frustrated with some guys I was training, and then I got nervous, and then I got sad, and then all kinds of emotions, man. And in this chapter of Why Are We Here, it talks about it. And I brought my book, man, because I truly believe that NA literature was written for an addict like me. And I found that out through having a relapse, and before I relapsed, I remember going through the book and telling myself, oh, I don't have to worry about that. I don't have to worry about that. That's not for me. That's not for me. And through the pain and misery of a relapse, I opened this book, and I no longer allowed my disease to lie to me. And I'm still nervous, even though I said all that. On the topic of why are we here, man, it says, before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. I'm going to be 25 years old next month. Before coming to NA, I didn't know how to shave. My significant other will tell you some of the first bills that I sent out in my recovery, I mailed them back to me because I forgot how to mail a letter through my disease. I didn't know how to fill out a job application. I didn't know how to answer that question, have you ever been convicted of a felony? It scared the hell out of me. And I didn't know nothing about life, man. I didn't know how to put other people's needs in front of my wants. I didn't know nothing about living, man. I didn't know that, like, if the trash was full, you had to take it out. I knew absolutely nothing about life. The only thing that I knew about life was, like, and I'm going to go right to the bitter ends, and I'm not going to try to indulge in war stories or anything like that. The only thing I knew about life was, like, drawing up from mud puddles, man. The only new thing I knew about life was, like, chasing the floor for plaster. The only thing I knew about, like, listen, man, listen to how this fear of failure and everything inside me existed, man. I remember being, like, 15 years old, having 9, 10 of my friends cut up on me brutally, say very raw things about me that were completely mean, man. And, like, the pipe used to go around, I'm talking about, like, marijuana weed, man. And, like, I used to just watch the pipe and just stay seated, even though, like, my spirit was being raped, and, like, these people didn't give nothing about me, man. And, like, I would sit there and listen to all this ridicule and all this talk about me, man, just for that drug. Like, when I was 15 years old, I'm talking, I was powerless a long time ago. And I understand that, and the way I understand that today is because of what the Just for Today reading talks about I got a new perspective on my life through this fellowship, through the steps, through my sponsor. But, like, when I sit up here and I say, like, I didn't know how to shave before I came to NA, man, like, I'm not lying. Like, the dude that sits up here in front of you, man, like, shot dope with his father. So, like, my incapability of facing life on life's terms, there was none, man. There was nothing inside of me. It talks about in this chapter that self-esteem was non-existent. There was nothing, man. Even when I came into NA, man, like, the only thing I knew was that, like, I wanted to stop detoxing. I wanted to stop being sick, man. I wanted my legs to stop cramping up. I wanted to be able to sleep like a normal human being. I didn't care about a job, man. I just wanted to stop hurting. I didn't like pricking my veins, man. I didn't like pushing through scar tissue. And, like, you guys shattered that denial for me. And, like, the pain through your experience and strength and hope came, man. And, like, when I had relapsed for 3 weeks and spent all this money, man, like, I could not deny that this thing worked. Even while I was using. And when I came back in, man, I was full of so much shame and so much guilt, man. Like, I didn't even know how to talk to people anymore. I couldn't even look anybody in the eye. So how would I be capable of facing life on life's terms if I can't look anybody in the eye? How would I be able to go to a job interview if I wasn't able to look anybody in the eye? I wasn't able to tell you guys, like, I want to use. Like, for some reason, like, I thought that was wrong to want to use. I'm an addict. I truly understand that. And if I want to get high, man, I'm letting somebody know today. But, see, this addiction, it talks about it being a cunning enemy of life. And, like, the reality of it for me is, like, I believe this tired old lie, man. Like, once an addict, always an addict. And I believed I wouldn't amount to nothing. And, like, the cunning enemy of life is, like, I didn't have a life. I would never have a life. And I would never have a life worth living, for that matter. Man, and I sit here and I think about the life I have today. Because of this fellowship, because of the steps, and because of the people that care about me in my life, man, and it's truly amazing. And I'm not going to go there yet because, like, I want you guys to be able to identify me before I give some hope. Like, I remember being in a treatment facility, man, and this tech did these death cards. And this tech was a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and I didn't really know anything about Narcotics Anonymous. I knew there was these guys that came in every Sunday and they spoke, and I sat in the back of the gymnasium and couldn't hardly hear them. And I knew, like, the unit I was in the rehab, we had this cool little slogan, and I like to say it. That's all I knew about this NA meeting, this H&I meeting. And this guy, this tech man, and he's still clean today. I see him at conventions when I go to conventions, and I love to see him, man, because, like, I didn't die from this disease. And part of it is his fact, or part of it is that he was in my life. And this guy worked at this treatment facility, and he had this stack of manila envelopes, and... Or not envelopes, these manila cards that were laminated. Each of them had faces on them. And they were clients that went through this treatment facility while he worked there. And he only had half the stack, and he went through this entire stack, man. And he said everybody's story about how the one guy left detox, walked down the hill, and died of a heart attack. And he talked about all this stuff. And I was sitting in this meeting in this group, and I had to be there, and I didn't want to be there, and my disease didn't want to be there. Every person that he talked about that came through this facility died. And every time he said that they died, and every time he told his story, like, my spirit was awakened, and, like, the thing in me that wanted to stand up a long time ago, which was my spirit and my true self, was standing up, and I was becoming painfully aware that, like, I will die. And the old lie that, like, it won't happen to me was becoming a lie. And despite that, and despite that evidence, and despite that tech, my disease resurfaced, and I had a friend in the treatment facility, and he said, let's go, and I said, okay. And I had no defense against this disease. And, like, that's what I understand today, man. Like, it doesn't matter how long I have clean. I wish I could sit up here and say that it does. But I've seen it so many times, man. We buried two people this year that I knew. I buried two people last year that I knew in this fellowship. And all I know is my desire is, like, I don't want to die from this disease, man. And if it does resurface, man, I want it to be about some food or cigarettes. I don't want it to be in a needle. And talks about at some point the disease was arrested, and recovery is then possible in that reading. And like, I don't know exactly when that moment was, but I know there was some series of events that happened in my life, and, like, my disease finally started to shut up. And I'm going to talk about a higher power, man, and like, I hope that everybody in this room finds one. Like, I had about 12 days clean, man, and I was detoxing off methadone, and I hadn't slept in 12 days. And I went to this meeting, and they were talking about obsession and compulsion. I remember this so clearly, like it was yesterday. And so everybody's in the room, and the meeting is talking about using, pretty much, because their obsession and their compulsion. So, like, I'm sitting in this room, I only got 12 days clean, and all I know is that I don't want to detox, and these guys are saying all this stuff about using, man, and, like, my mind is going. Like, I'm ready to get it in. And I went back to this, to the friend's house that I lived in, and my mind's going, man. I'm sitting there in my boxers, I'm trying to sleep, and I had a sponsor at the time, and I knew some people that were clean and that cared about me, and I had their phone numbers, and I didn't call them, and I didn't call my sponsor, and I didn't wake my friend up to tell him that I felt like getting high, because I knew he'd tell me that you're just gonna go to jail. Why would you want to get high? Because that's the way he thought. And I didn't do none of that stuff, but I remembered what this guy said in the meeting. And prior to, like I didn't really pray, man. I prayed for the next one. I remember standing by the payphone, man, praying the dope man would show up sooner. Like, literally, wholeheartedly, like that kind of honest prayer. And this guy said, I surrender my obsession and compulsion to a God of my understanding every day. I hit my knees and try to do it. Or I do it. And that was like the only thing I remember from that meet, man. And in my mind, my disease was so wrapped up, I figured out where I was going to cop, where I was going to stay, where I was going to get the money for the next one. On all these things, man, I was 3 weeks down the road in Philadelphia getting a brick. Seriously, I just didn't start moving my feet and making phone calls yet. And I remember what this dude said, man, and I hit my knees, and I hadn't slept in 12 days, and I don't know about anybody else, man, but like, when I'm detoxing, man, off the disease, like, sleep is a miracle for me, man, because like, to have 8 or 6 or 3 hours or even a minute of sleep away from the disease and the leg cramps and the bone and joint aches and all that stuff, man, is like a divine blessing. And like, all I wanted when I wanted to stop using was to sleep. I hated watching late night TV. I hated surfing it. Thank God I had a TV at the time to do that, man. But like, I'm sitting there and I hit my knees, man, and I said, God, relieve me of this obsession and compulsion. And I don't remember nothing, man, but it was like a lightning, and I don't know about your spiritual experience, man, but like, this is one for me. I don't remember nothing, man. All I knew is that I fell asleep, man. And the next day I woke up for the first time in years, and my first thought wasn't to use. And like, that was enough evidence for me that there was something working in my life. And like, that was the first time, like, I had a few days that the disease said, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go. Well, you can tell them this lie. You can say this. You need money for this. Da 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 da. You can use just once. You got 12 days clean. Blah, 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 blah. All of that stuff went out, man, and I was actually able to go to a meeting and not just hear one thing. And I was actually able to listen and, I was free. I was free from, and the disease kind of got a little bit in a cage for a little while, man. And I started hearing this stuff about steps, and I started hearing this thing about sponsorship, and I started hearing more about sponsorship, and I had a sponsor, and you know, and at this time, my crisis level was so high, I was willing to do everything but that. So, as far as the disease being arrested, man, like, I truly and honestly sit up here at this podium and believe it's through the steps. And, like, let me be honest with you about that, because the other night, Wednesday night, I'm in a meet, man, and I'm talking about the steps, and I'm talking about, like, there's two forms of honesty, one of living the truth and one of telling the truth. And my sponsor looks at me and he says, how long have you been sitting on that second step? Because, like, I'm going back through, man, and like, I need to be honest with you because, like, unless I tell the truth, man, there's nothing behind my words. Unless I'm living the truth, there's nothing behind my words. Because in the 12th step, it talks about our message is meaningless unless we live it. And it talks about that our actions can give more meaning or something like that than the literature ever could when we live it. And I truly believe that. So that's why I'm sitting up here and I'm saying, like, I procrastinated for like 2 weeks now and I haven't gone over my second step. But I honestly believe that the steps are the solution to my problem. Are the solution to this disease. And I gotta open my book, man. I'm a big literature guru and all that stuff, and I have come to find out that the definition of guru means a teacher. And like I was talking about, it says, today we experience a full range of feelings. Before coming into the fellowship, we either felt elated or depressed. Our negative sense of self has been replaced by a positive concern for others. Answers are provided and problems are solved. It is a great gift to feel human again. I'm a human being, man. Like inside me, like I understand why I'm here today, man. Like, I don't see recovery as a burden anymore. I see it rather as a gift. I go to work, man, and there's some people that need this stuff, man, that don't use nothing. I'm so grateful to be here, man. to learn what honesty is, open-mindedness, willingness, to learn what the truth of life really is, man, and to not believe this lie that the disease told me again, man. I go home last night, man, and I'm talking to a sponsee earlier in the day, and he's telling me about how his girl made this list of all the reasons why she loves him and stuff like that. So I start telling my sponsee, oh man, my girl hasn't done nothing like that for a while, and the disease, I'm all wrapped up and complaining and bitching and all this stuff about the disease, man, and like, earlier, like I dropped my girlfriend off for work, man, and she says to me, make sure you look on the coffee table when you get home. So I go home, man, and I start trying to practice this program. I'm like, I need to write her a letter because I'm going to be in bed before she gets home. So I start writing this letter, and I remember she said, look on the coffee table. And I look on the coffee table, man, and there's this card on this table, and I open this card, man. And in this card, it talks about, it was all these nice things, man, that were written about me. And like, I had gotten cards like this before from parents and grandmothers and stuff like that, and I had gotten stuff like this from people in my life before, but like, I didn't believe the stuff that was in the card, because I don't know about you, man, but like, I used to have women look me dead in the eye and say I was the greatest man alive, man, and the thing was, is I was living a double life, and I was so wrapped up in the lie and manipulation, man, when they were sitting there and they was telling me like I was the greatest man alive and how much they loved me and everything, in the back of my mind I was saying to myself, you're so fucking slick, Ryan. Only she knew what she was doing last night. And like, I got this card, man, and like, I haven't done nothing wrong in a long time in this relationship, man, like that's detrimental. And like I argue and I do petty stuff, man, but like, I read this card, man, and like, these words that she chose for me to read, man, like, I believed that I was what the word said for once, man. Like, I believed that like I was a good person. I believed that I was worthy of love. I felt human. And I bawled my eyes out like a little boy, man, when I read this thing. And like, there's some reasons for that, man, because like I believed that nothing would ever work out for me no matter how hard I tried. And like, this is really working out for me now. Like, I have a healthy relationship. And I don't know how to handle it sometimes, man. Because my disease wants to resurface through all kinds of defects, man. And why is she talking to him? And I hold on to that, and then the anger comes back, and then the elden anger starts resentment, and three things that stake us out. Some people say resentments, relationships, and prescription drugs. But like today, man, like I'm able to say, why was you talking to him? And she says, oh yeah, baby, we're going out tomorrow night. And I'm like, this is just some self-centered fear, man, what most of my disease is based in. And I understand that today. And it says, what a change from the way we used to be, man. Because before you talked, I was checking mileage on the car. I was picking you up to and from work. Didn't mean if I had to take off work. You wasn't allowed to talk to no males. Nothing like that, man. And today, like, I trust God with a lot of stuff in my life. And that's one of the things. And like, speaking of God again, man, like I need to sit up here and tell you about the greatest miracle that I believe has happened to me in all of my recovery. And when I heard this stuff, man, it felt like every freaking planet in this solar system aligned. And the sun said, today is your day, Ryan. And I have never felt more right in my life, man. Like, I'm going to be a father, and I am the happiest man alive behind this stuff, man. And like, the disease wants to tell me that you ain't gonna be capable, and it's gonna tell me that like, you ain't gonna grow up, and you were the dude that chased the floor for the next one. What do you have to offer to a child? And you know what? It's bullshit. Because my God says, you are a good person. Look how you help people in your life today. You show up at work all the time. I just made employee of the month last week, man. I didn't even hold a job. Come on, I stole $26,000 from a children's organization, the last job I had before recovery, man. And like, I'm gonna have a child, man, like the gift of life. To be responsible for a life, man, was beyond my dreams when I came in here. The only thing I wanted was to stop using. And that's why, you know, I keep coming to meetings, man, because I gotta keep the pain right up front, man. I gotta remember the relapse and chasing the next one and crying like, and I couldn't get no words out. But God helped me. I have to remember that, man, because that's the way I arrest my disease, because if I remember my past, I'm not doomed to repeat it. So, like, on the topic of having a child, man, like, I want a son so bad, you know, because I'm a guy and all this stuff, man, but you know what, like, my only prayer has been that this child is healthy, man, and, like, doesn't have hepatitis C, because I have hepatitis C, and doesn't have to go through the things that I have to go through, and I'm, like, telling God with the willingness and all the willingness inside of me and all the willingness inside my spirit, inside my soul, and all the depths that makes me whole, man, that, like, I'm willing to do whatever, just show me the path I want this child to not live like I do. That is a change. Because I would have used a child to collect food stamps, man, before I came to this fellowship. I know where my honesty is at, man, and I know where my disease is at. So, like, we know the NA program works. The program convinced us that we need to change ourselves instead of trying to change the people and situations around us. We discovered new opportunities and found a sense of self-worth, man. I'm worth more than a bag of dope and far much more than that, man. And, I learned self-respect, man. Like, I like making myself coffee and breakfast in the morning. I enjoy that stuff, man. Before the disease said, get dirty clothes on, forget taking a shower, call dude, let's go. I like not being fast-paced. I like slowing down. I like my life today. And I love the people around me. And I don't just say that, man. I can look them dead in the eye, and there ain't no slick comments behind what I say. So this is a program for learning. By working the steps, we come to accept the higher power's will. About this whole child thing, man, like, the only prayer that I prayed before about having a child was, like, on your time, not mine, man. And I truly believe that this is his time, not mine. And I know it's my higher power's will for my life. And acceptance leads to recovery. Like, I want to tell you guys something. A friend of mine that lives in Punxsutawney, in his program, he talks about acceptance is what I've been looking for all my life, and I found it nowhere else but in these rooms. And I truly believe that, man, because I was a guy that used to go to parties and got so screwed up that everybody talked about me in school, and I loved hearing it. I was the guy that sold drugs just because everybody had to come to me to get them. I like that feeling, man, of acceptance. And in this program, man, like, you guys accept me for being a bum, a junkie, that was unemployable, had two felonies on his records, knew nothing about life or nothing about other people, and knew nothing but self-centered motives and selfish, evil ways, and was plotting and scheming on you to get help for me, man, and you guys didn't care. You loved me and loved me and loved me until I could love myself. And I used to think that shit was gay when people said that, man, but I see it today. And I feel worthy of NA's love. When people hug me today, man, like, I feel worthy of that hug. There's no shame and guilt behind that hug, and there's no, I'm able to look people in the eye and be grateful for who I am, like it says in We Do Recover. It says, we lose our fear of the unknown and we are set free. Like, this disease is always going to be here, and I understand that. I have a disease of addiction. It's incurable, chronic, and fatal, and progressive, and all that stuff, man, and I understand that. And, I'm never going to be truly free from it today, man. But I know from the bottom of my heart, man, that if I pick up the drugs, I have no chance. And the freedom I experience in my life today from not using, man, is like I'm able to walk into a treatment facility, man, and like not exchange phone numbers about how you can get cheaper prices in a bigger city. I'm able to go there and carry a message of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm able to go to bed every night with one woman, and I'm able to not think if, what if she finds out? That kind of freedom, man, because I don't know, I stuffed my feelings in other people for a long time and tried to cover it up that void for a long time, man, and I'm free from that stuff today, man, like, I don't cheat, and I'm very proud of that fact. The other freedom that I experienced, man, is like at my job, man, when they said I was employee of the month, like I felt like an employee of the month. I don't know, a lot of my disease is based in fear, and I want to share the time here and everything like that. So I'm going to say this and shut up. There was this movie, and this is premeditated, so maybe you won't get it, I don't know. But there's this movie. And on this movie, there was this young punk kid, kind of like me, man, knew nothing about life. And he wanted to join this basketball team, man. And the coaches changed, and the guy didn't like the coach, so he left. And he walked out of this basketball team. And he came back. And when he came back, because his friend got shot in the streets, and he knew that he had to change his life, kind of like me. I knew I had to change my life through a relapse, man. I felt like my spirit was shot, just like this dude's friend. And when he came back into this basketball team, man, the coach made him do all the stuff the team had done in the last so many weeks, I forget exactly. And he started doing his stuff immediately. He got on the ground, he started doing push-ups, and he started doing gassers and all that stuff, man, to catch up, and he didn't stop. And the coach kept asking him the same question. He said, "What is your greatest fear? What is your greatest fear?" He says, "Is it that you're inadequate? Is that you don't feel you're capable of?" And this guy didn't answer him the whole time. And through this whole movie, he asked him this, "What is your greatest fear? What is your greatest fear?" So it comes down to the end, man, where like this coach is being thrown out of the school because their grades suck and all this stuff, and all this team stands up for him in unity, kind of like what this thing's about, this whole camping thing up here, this unity retreat. And they stand up for this coach, man, and the coach comes in, and this dude stands up with conviction, man, and he says, "My greatest fear is an inadequacy. It's that I'll shine better than my peers. And that by me shining better than my peers, they'll be afraid to be around me, afraid to be like me, afraid to talk to me. Look, man, my disease says that my greatest fear is success, man. Like, I don't know how to succeed. I've never been there. That's the fear of the unknown, man. And I truly believe that, like, if I work these principles, which are a truth or a law, look it up in Webster's Dictionary, like, the outcome's endless, man, and I have this world by the balls if I just try this thing to the best of my ability, and I truly believe that that's my greatest fear. It's not that I'm inadequate, man, it's that I might be better than you. Or whoever's judging that, I don't know. But it's that I'll shine, man. I'll shine greater than I ever imagined. That I'll be the father that I'd always wanted to be. That I dreamed about being. That I'll be the guy, the employee of the month. That I'll pay my bills on time. Is that I'll have something to offer on the inside, and it's just not a falsehood or an emptiness or a shell or a fake words. I truly believe that. I don't know if you got anything out of what I said, man. Like, it wasn't me. It's this program and God. And with that, like, that's all I have.
Thanks, Ryan. I'd like to introduce the second speaker, Mike B. from the Indiana Central Group of N.A. in the Laurel Mountain Highland area of N.A.
My name is Mike, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Mike.
That was great, Ryan. I tell you what, if you want to learn something and learn how to have the faith, get a hold with Ryan afterwards and talk to him. He always picks up my spirits. And I tell you what, that's why I'm here. You know, when I came into this program, I came for the wrong reasons. You know, my marriage was falling apart. My life was falling apart. And I thought I could come here and save everything. And I got into recovery, and I managed to put some time together. But I didn't want to do what was suggested to me. I just wanted to put the drugs down. I wanted the wife back. I wanted the job to go good. And you know what? That stuff actually started to happen even without working the steps. You know, I got a sponsor only in name. When I came into this program, I couldn't read. I could barely write. You know, I use it as an excuse not to write out my steps, not to keep a journal. You know, I tried convincing my sponsor, "Why don't we, you know, just talk? Can we do this on tape?" You know, all that dope fiend stuff. And you know what? To an extent, he let me get away with it, but I think he was letting me learn my own lesson. For my first 2 years in this program, I hung around, same people, places, and things. And they used to tell me, you know, "Mike, this is great. You're the same ass, you know, now as you were when you were using." And that's because I was doing all the same things except getting high. You know, I was lying, cheating, and stealing, and I was lying and cheating, stealing off of them. And eventually it caught up with me, you know, and I relapsed. And I tell you what, once you get a taste of the program and you relapse, it definitely doesn't get any better out there. And it went downhill quick. And luckily, you know, in that time, I made some friends in these rooms, and for some reason, they would not leave me alone. They kept calling, stopping at my house. You know, everything was falling apart again, and finally, they drug me back to a meeting. And I didn't want to be there, you know, but I stuck around for a couple of days, and I started to listen again. And I tell you what, the first year that they had this retreat, I came, and it, and the Sunday morning spiritual speaker, guy was speaking, and he was leaving, you know, to come here. He came Sunday morning, and he was in a hurry, and he was leaving, and there was a butterfly in the road when he was pulling out, and he stopped to pick that butterfly up and set it in the grass. And as he was talking about this, a damn butterfly flew in the window and flew over top of the guy and landed. And if that wasn't a sign from God, I don't know what it was. And for some reason, you know, I started to get a little more open-minded and listening. And what I did was I had to come into these rooms, and I had to look around at all the people in these rooms. And I did, you know, I wanted to find people that were like me, you know, that I wanted to find my buddies in here. And that was a big problem. I had to start looking for people that were different from me, because I needed to learn to be a different person. And it's like, you know, being out here camping, you know, when you go to start that fire tonight, you know, I came into this program, I wanted to jump, you know, I wanted to do the steps, you know, all at once, have them done and over with. I wanted to throw them big logs on the fire, get it done and over with. I didn't realize I had to go around these rooms, and I had to pick up all them twigs, you know, and throw them in the bottom of that fire pit. Because without that kindling, I'm not going to get a good fire burning. And, you know, that's what I had to learn to do, you know. And I tell you what, when I came into these rooms, I was racist, homophobic, hateful. And, you know, I wasn't racist against just one race. I was racist against everybody. I hated everybody. And today, you know, I can reach out to all you guys. Doesn't matter who it is, you know. And I give you love, you give me love back. And I, you know, I keep coming to these meetings because I got to keep learning. You know, it's like going to work, you know. I can go to work and do just enough to get by, you know, work just enough hours to pay the bills and, you know, and just get by. Am I going to be happy with that? I got to work my program like that. I got to come in here and I got to reach out to you guys, and I got to take what you got, and I got to take it home with me, and I got to strive for that little bit more, you know. And if I stop coming to meetings, and I've, you know, gone periods of times without going to meetings, and I can do it without using, but I get sick, you know. I get sick real quick, you know. I lose my spirituality. I lose my connection with people because I'm not a people person. Like I said, I came in here angry, hating people, and somebody said, you know, one of the greatest fears people has is getting up and speaking in front of other people, and I'm doing that right now. I would have never even wanted to be around this many people before, you know. I was like one-on-one person, you know, let's get high, nobody else around. And I keep coming back. I learn how to, you know, associate with everyone, to be a human, you know, how to treat people. And, you know, I came into this program, I thought I had to have a woman to be whole, you know, and I've been through the relationships, and, you know, and they don't work out, you get hurt, you know, other people get hurt. And I learned that I have to come into these rooms, and I got to learn how to have relationships with you guys in these rooms, you know. I got to learn how to, you know, treat Ryan with respect and honor, and deal with his character defects and not have them set me off the wall before I could ever learn how to treat a woman with respect and dignity. And you know, I got to keep coming back. You know, there's days I don't want to go to meetings. You know, it's just like work. I don't want to go to work every day. You know, I'd like to stay home, wax my car, you know, hang out with the kids. But, you know, there's things in life I have to do, and coming to meetings is one of them. And there was a point in my recovery where I thought I came to meetings to help the newcomer. Well, you know, that was just some fantasy I had in my head that, you know, I was somebody's higher power. You know, newcomers come into the rooms, you know, I I grab them up, hang out with them, you know, bring them in as my little brothers, you know, and it's not to help them, it's to help me, you know. I need it, you know. I have, you know, very little to offer. I got to take what you guys have and you know, learn to use that before I have anything to offer anybody else. And I don't know, you know, I've seen a lot of miracles in this program. And you know, this program, it's not an easy program. I came in, you know, I got time clean. I ended up divorced. You know, the business I was working at, you know, it went under. I have to work for someone else now. I really don't like that. I lost two houses, you know, filed bankruptcy. But you know what? By coming to these meetings and letting it out and share about it, you know, I was able to make it through it without getting high. And I know today, you know, listening to problems that other people go through and seeing what they go through and how they reach out, you know, that if I keep coming back to these rooms and opening up and letting you guys know how I feel and what I'm going through, that I'm going to be able to make through it myself. You know, I don't always do the right thing, and I, you know, I'm not always the most spiritual person, but with that help, I can make it through it without getting high. And then that spirituality comes back, you know, and then I start doing the next right thing. I was involved in a situation this past weekend, you know, where a couple buddies of mine were in a car accident right in front of me. And as I got out of that car to go up and help them, you know, the kid that crossed the center line and hit them, you know, my first reaction was anger. Well, it was actually fear, but any emotion I feel usually turns into anger, because I'm still learning to deal with my emotions. And when that anger kicked in, you know, I wanted to go over and put the boots to this kid. And as I was with my friends at the car, you know, trying to help them and take care of them, people were coming up and telling me about this 17-year-old kid, and I told them I don't want to hear about it, you know. I said, I don't care if he dies, you know. I said, I don't care if he dies. These are my buddies. And I wanted to go over, and I wanted to kick that kid in the head. I wanted to take my boots to him. And I was real angry and, you know, real pissed off. And that 17-year-old kid ended up dying, man. That could have been the addict that was still suffering that didn't make it to these rooms. But, you know, anything I said that night, it was out of anger, and I realized it had no effect on the outcome of what happened to him. But, you know, when I calmed down and everything was all right, you know, and I found out a little bit about this boy, you know, I realized, you know, what he was going through, went through, and what his family's going to go through. And I pray for that kid's family today. You know, and when I used to pray for other people, it was, I didn't mean it, you know, it was just fake. Like when I first started coming to meetings, I said the serenity prayer, you know, when we opened the meeting and closed the meeting. I didn't know what I was saying, you know. And it wasn't until, you know, I started breaking this, you know, breaking this program down, and that's when I got a sponsor that, you know, made me write on one word at a time and stuff like that, and listening to other people's experiences with it, that I started to learn what the serenity prayer meant and what these steps really meant and the traditions and you know, before that I was just winging it. And it, you know, I've been around for a while, you know, in and out of these rooms. And I tell you what, it took some time. This stuff's just sinking in for me. A lot of stuff happens, and it happens quick. And I know if I wasn't coming to these meetings and I didn't have a support group, that I'd be falling real quick. I struggled a lot with religion. I was raised Catholic, real strict Catholic, and I was turned off of, you know, organized religion, and I spent, as I got some time in these rooms and had trouble, you know, finding a higher power, I realized how powerful this group was, and I spent some time, you know, going to the Catholic Church and talking to the priest there and asking him, you know, what this religion was all about, and after, you know, many of visits and many hours of talk, came to the conclusion that coming to these meetings is like coming to church for me. You know, my parents go to church, you know, twice a week to get their faith and their hope and to get their, you know, little pick-me-up to get through the week. I come to these meetings. This is where I get my faith and my hope and my pick-me-up. And, you know, sometimes I make one meeting a week. Sometimes I need to hit 7, you know, 10. You know, I try to hit as many meetings as I possibly can. You know, some weeks are better than others. But, you know, I learned to break it down, you know. Everybody in this room probably has a different concept of a higher power. You know, I choose to call mine God, and I came to the conclusion that my God wishes you no ill will, and I'm sure your God wishes me no ill will. So it really doesn't matter what we call it, you know. We're all in this together, you know, and your higher power is looking out for me, and mine's looking out for you. And, you know, so that's what keeps me going. You know, I could move beyond that, you know, and move on with my program. I know this program is more powerful than I even know. You know, I've yet to see what it can do. I thought that, you know, gifts of recovery were getting material things back. Like I said, I came to this program, I couldn't read. I spent a lot of time, you know, reading kiddie books to my oldest daughter now, and learned to read, you know. Went back, got my GED. I have a pretty good job right now. I have nice car, motorbike, all that stuff. But you know what? None of that stuff matters. When I sit back and look at it, the relationship I have with my kids today, I came into this program, I never read my daughter a book, I never watched cartoons with her. I worked, I got high. I thought that if I paid the bills, there was food on the table and a roof over their heads, that I was productive, responsible, and self-supporting. And you know what? I wasn't even close to that. You know? You can take all that stuff away. And when this stuff unrolled this weekend with this accident, and I spent the week, you know, the night, the next day, in Pittsburgh at the hospital, because, you know, until my buddy's family showed up, you know, because I didn't want to leave him alone. And I got a phone call that morning that my oldest daughter had a real rough time that night. And luckily, you know, a good friend of mine in the program, part of my support group, was there, and I was able to, you know, cry a little bit on his shoulder. And, you know, I was worrying about getting home and how my kids would be. And when I pulled in, you know, I just whipped the truck in the yard, and my daughters came out, and I wanted to run up to them and make sure they were all right. And they ran up to me, and they were like, "Daddy, are you all right?" And I just broke down, man. I cried, you know, like I never cried before. And I had to let it all out, man. And I tell you what, a few years ago, you know, like most of us, you know, guys, you know, you're raised, you're not supposed to cry, you know, manly stuff, you know. All that stuff's bullshit. You know what? If I'm upset, you know, I cry when I'm happy, sad. You know, I got to let it out, man. If I hold that stuff in, I'm going to get sick. And it's all right to express those feelings, you know, happiness, joy, all that stuff that I pent up my whole life, you know, and turned into hatred and anger. I don't want my kids to have that, you know. And I try to set the best example I can for them today. And, you know, on a daily basis, probably sometime through the day, a thought of using goes through my head. But I don't have to entertain that thought. You know, thoughts of anger come through my head. You know, I don't have to entertain those thoughts today. I act out sometimes. I say stuff I don't mean, you know. But I try to do the next right thing. And if I do screw up, I try to make amends as quick as possible. And believe me, I've had to make amends, you know, lately, because my ego gets to me, and I think I'm somebody I'm not, and I hurt people's feelings, and I say stuff I shouldn't, and you know, it's not easy sometimes, but you know, you just go up and, you know, apologize, and if they accept it, they do. If they don't, you know, we move on. And I don't know. this is a real powerful program, and you know, there's a lot of diverse people in these rooms, and you know, people with life experiences that I haven't experienced, and you know, I need to reach out, and I need to grasp onto that and learn what I can from it, you know, everybody in these rooms. And when I first came around, you know, I wanted to be with the pretty people and the people that had the nice cars and stuff like that. And I do the same thing outside in life, you know. I got to carry this program outside, you know, into my life outside. Because on a daily basis, you know, I work with people that are addicts and that need help. And when I go to work, you know, I didn't want to hang out with the guy that stank or something, or, you know. But what I've learned is by getting to know these people and stuff, they have so much to offer me, you know, because there's so much more to life than you know, what you see on the outside. You know, we come into these rooms and you hear people talk about, you know, starting out, building your foundation, getting a solid foundation and building that house on top of it. And I think about, you know, those big houses on the corner, the old mansions, you know, that are all run down and people fix them up, you know, and you drive past and you think, you know, that house looked, you know, used to be all run down and the shutters were hanging off and, you know, the condemned sign on the door, and now it's so pretty, you know. And, you know, I wanted people to see me like that. You know, I was a piece of shit out there, a dirt bag. You know, I wanted to be as low down dirty as I possibly could. And then I started getting clean, and I wanted people to see me as this spiritual God, and, you know, I was better than everybody. And, you know what, I kept forgetting, you know, that house had a well, you know, and that water had a lot of sulfur in it. And no matter how pretty that house looked on the outside, you know, every time you took a drink of that water, it tasted like shit, you know. And I realized, you know, that the Colligan man had to come up and hook a couple tanks up and get that sulfur out of the water. And that's when I learned that I had to start working on me, on the inside, you know. You know, it didn't matter how I dressed or how my hair was cut or anything like that. I had to start working on me inside, you know. I had to get that water inside me clean, you know. And that's when I could start sharing stuff and letting it out, you know, and you guys weren't getting that sulfur water and that bad taste. And, you know, that's what I'm trying to work on today. I still have problems with the outside appearance things, you know. I tend to be a little flashy, whatever, you know. I like to stand out, you know, my vehicles, whatever, and I can't seem to get over that, but, you know, I'm working on it. But to me, you know, I'm trying to look past all this and see what's inside people, man. It doesn't matter what they look like, what they're dressed like, what color they are, you know, creed, religion, you know, sexual identity. I want to learn what that person has inside, you know. And when I open up and put down my fears, and that's what it is, it's my fears, you know. When I put my fears down and start letting you people inside and hearing what you have to say, that's when I start to grow. And with that, I'm going to, you know, step aside here.
I would like to thank the speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. Could we please have the reading just for today at the podium, please?